Well, I think they should react to the prospect that may or may not involve this British hostage in the way that I think they are reacting, in the way that we reacted 10 years ago. It's much better, if you can, for these matters to be handled secretly, privately. You need communication with the hostage takers, but not negotiation. And there's a very fine line between those two. Apart from anything else, you need to find out whether the hostages are still alive or not, because I think there's quite a lot of evidence that these hostage takers may have killed hostages some while ago and then gradually release the information. So it's very, very difficult to handle. The British government, like the American government, rightly in my view, have had a consistent policy of not entertaining the payment of ransoms to hostage takers. I think that's the right decision. At the same time, as I say, you need some communication with hostage takers and, of course, have to handle the desperate and difficult emotions of the families concerned.
Indeed. One of the things that Number 10 is making clear this morning, we're hearing from our political correspondents so far, is that there will be no knee-jerk response. They already knew about this British hostage. We're not going to react to the fact that he's now appearing on social media. But there's a problem, which is, in one sense, which is different from what it was for you 10 years ago, which is that everybody now has access to this. It is much more potent in a way. I mean, clearly it's the same thing, but it's arguably much more potent, and there will be more pressure on the government to act.
Yes, I mean, there was a lot of pressure 10 years ago, let me say, but there wasn't social media available in the way it is now. It was still awful. So there is pressure. I think this idea about knee-jerk reaction, which ought to be pushed aside, I don't accuse the government of knee-jerk reaction for a second. You need people to look seriously and soberly at the situation. Of course it's the case that if there is a Britain who has been subject to one of these terrible assassinations, that will increase generally the sensitivity and the sensitization within the UK towards this barbarity that's going on, and increase pressure for some kind of military involvement by the United Kingdom. And that's not unreasonable. And in my view, as we saw on Monday, there was increasing pressure and I think support, for example, for the British government to provide military supplies to the Peshmerga and to be more involved in that way in this situation.
And that's something that you would support? You think we should be arming the Kurdish Peshmerga?
Yes, I mean, with this caveat that I'm not in possession of all the intelligence, so my starting point would certainly say, yes, we ought to have a more active policy of support, unless there are overwhelming arguments of which I'm not aware against it.
What if the United States said to us, we want you to join our military, the military strikes that we are engaged in?
My instinct would be probably to do so. And I just make this point. Of course, no one is aware more than I am of the legacy of the 2003 Iraq War. But as a colleague put it in the House of Commons on Monday, we shouldn't be, of course we should learn from the past, but we shouldn't be paralysed by the past at the same time. And the simple truth is that these barbaric jihadists were doing this kind of atrocity before the Iraq War. 9/11 happened before the Iraq War, not afterwards, and they would be doing it irrespective of the Iraq War. This is a serious threat to civilization. Alongside that, I would like to see us not only building our alliance with Turkey, which we do have, but ensuring that we have far closer relations with Iran, and we need a new strategy towards Iran.
Is President Obama paralysed by the past, do you think?
I think that he bears a burden in respect of the past, and much though I respect him, I think that, if you like, he's very long on analysis and not quite as fleet of foot on being decisive, and you need a balance if you're the President of the United States.
Are you disappointed?
It's a difficult job being the President of the United States, but I certainly think this NATO summit provides an opportunity for some very clear leadership by the United States.
If the United States did come to the UK, because they are taking military action at the moment in Iraq, and if they came to the United States and said...
To the United Kingdom,
and said, we need your help tonight... Yeah. What should David Cameron's response be? Should it be, hold on, I need to go to Parliament?
I'm right in the forefront of arguing that Parliament should make decisions, wherever possible, in advance on military action. But we've always said, and everybody must know this, that if there is an urgent case for military action where surprise is of the essence, then of course you go afterwards. That's what happened in respect of Kosovo. So everybody would understand if Mr. Cameron and his colleagues decided for very good reasons of security to go first and then to consult Parliament afterwards. In that situation, at the same time, it would be essential that the leader of the opposition was consulted in advance, but that happens a great deal in any event.
And Labour's position on this should be?
Well, I think it's clear that Labour's position is one of readiness to consider the options, as indeed it was last August when we had this emergency meeting of the House of Commons on August the 29th. But if you're going to consider the options from opposition, you've got to be, as it were, brought into the tent and not just spoon-fed bits of information.
But that was just over a year ago, and at that time it was effectively Labour that put the kibosh on any action in Syria.
Yes.
Now, if we're talking here, when we talk about Iraq, arguably we're also talking about Syria, aren't we?
Well, we are, although, for all sorts of reasons, the legalities and the logistics of action in Syria are more complicated. But let me just say this. The reason why the Labour Party and many people on the Conservative benches, once they'd heard the case, including me, pulled back from supporting it on August the 29th last year, was it was not clear what it was supposed to achieve. The ostensible aim of it was to eliminate Bashar Assad's chemical weapons, but that wasn't clear that it was going to achieve this. And the result of the House of Commons, led by Labour, saying, hang on a second, was to produce a better outcome than would have been achieved by airstrikes, because we got rid of chemical weapons.
But look at the mess in Iraq and Syria now with ISIS.
Yeah, but it would have, in my judgment, it would have been worse, and the ISIS, the Islamists, jihadists, would have been more empowered if that military action had gone wrong. The situation now, Sarah, is a different one, and new situations demand different approaches and strategies.
When you look back at the sweep of British foreign policy and you say that these people were carrying out these sort of actions before 9/11, they weren't affecting us in the same way prior to 9/11. I just wonder whether you think that British foreign policy, whether you think we've made a mess of it, basically.
We've made errors. The post-9/11 situation was incredibly difficult. That did affect us. I mean, but the truth is that given that Al-Qaeda was committing all sorts of atrocities well before 9/11, USS Cole, the huge deaths in East Africa.
Indeed,
the West,
we're talking about
action.
Iraq now,
the West should,
and
the
Iraq
West,
was not in the frame then.
No, the West should have taken action. If you're saying to me, do I feel that the Iraq war has contributed to the current instability in Iraq, the answer to that is yes. I don't know to what extent, but it certainly has. Would these jihadists be acting in any event? Also, strangely, yes, as well. And would Iraq have been stable if there hadn't been an Iraq war? Not on your life. It would have been probably in the same chaos as Syria. So I take my responsibilities, just so we're clear, I think about my responsibilities about the Iraq war every day. But I also just say that in the absence of the Iraq war, it would not be sunshine and stability in that part of the Middle East, and it isn't next door in Syria.
And can I just ask you, of course, we mentioned Ken Bigley, whether it's Ken Bigley or the British man that's now in the frame of these videos. When you are in the position that you have been in, that must be very hard. I mean, we're talking about an individual rather than many numbers, but
It is hard, but it's your job, so you have to put up with that. You're a volunteer. In the case of Ken Bigley, I got to know his family very well, and when we had the terrible news that he had been killed, went to Liverpool to see the family, and I thought that it was very, very important to give all the emotional, practical support we could to the Bigley family, but it takes over your time and your agenda for quite a period when you're facing a situation like this.
Jack Straw, thank you very much.